content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Money.com, The Retirement Guide, and Kiplinger Personal Finance. Our first three articles today are from Money.com. The first is entitled, Housing Market. Price cuts are in. Bidding wars are out. Home buyers rejoice. Price cuts are popping up on more houses for sale across the U.S., offering long-awaited relief following 2 years of fierce competition. Data released last week by the real estate brokerage Redfin shows more than 15% of home sellers dropped their asking price in nearly 100 big cities, with price cuts especially likely in spots that were hot housing markets during the pandemic. In the eight cities topping the list, more than half of homes for sale saw price cuts in July. The findings go hand in hand with the slow disappearance of bidding wars, which have plagued home buyers during the housing boom and a general cooling off of the housing market. Redfin reported that 44.3% of home sale offers written by the company's agents faced a bidding war, meaning a home gets more than one competitive offer in July. That's the lowest bidding war rate since home buyers flooded the market in the early months of the COVID-19 pandemic. More price cuts on homes for sale. The number of homes for sale with price drops spiked in July. All 97 metropolitan areas in the Redfin analysis saw at least 15% of homes for sale slash their asking price, including 27 cities that had 40% or more homes on the market with price cuts. Redfin pointed to several reasons for the price-cutting trend, including the steep rise in mortgage rates, an increase in inventory, and the fact that buyers seem to anticipate there will be better deals ahead. Sellers may also simply have forgotten and gotten greedy and set their prices too high for what the current market will bear. Individual home sellers and builders were both quick to drop their prices early this summer, mostly because they had unrealistic expectations of both price and timeliness. Boise Redfin agent Shauna Pendleton said in a statement, "They priced too high because their neighbor's home sold for an exorbitant price a few months ago, and they expected to receive multiple offers the first weekend because they heard stories about that happening." These 10 cities saw the highest share of home price decreases in July, according to Redfin. Boise, Idaho, Denver, Colorado, Salt Lake City, Utah, Tacoma, Washington, Tampa, Florida, Sacramento, California, Indianapolis, Indiana, Phoenix, Arizona, San Diego, California, and Portland, Oregon. A recent report from Realtor.com also showed how common price reductions are becoming nationally. The share of homes for sale with price cuts throughout the U.S. was 19.1% in July, compared to 9.4% the same month a year ago. Bygone bidding wars. Until recently, bidding wars all but defined the home buying experience since 2020. That summer marked a steep increase in buyers facing competing bids, and earlier this year, roughly two-thirds of homes for sale received multiple offers. By this June, the national bidding war rate was down to 51.5%, according to Redfin, compared to 62.5% the previous month and 66.7% in June of 2021. And bidding wars occurred on only 44% of homes in July. While the market is cooling, it's not coming to a crashing halt. Shohana Godwin, a Seattle-based Redfin real estate agent, said in a news release, house hunters who can still afford to buy should consider taking advantage of the slowdown, given that there's way less competition. Our next article, again appearing in Money.com, entitled, Used Car Prices Have Fallen for 4 Months Straight. Used car prices are finally dropping, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a great time to buy. The average price of a used vehicle has fallen for 4 months in a row, dipping below $29,300 in July, says the automotive research firm Edmunds. But don't pop the champagne in celebration just yet. We're still very far away from what anyone who's ever bought a used car in the past will be able to relate to, says Ivan Drury, Senior Manager of Insights at Edmunds. While prices are heading in the right direction, they're still historically very high. The average used vehicle price on record at Edmunds was $29,969, notched in December 2021. Prices have fallen consistently since then, but not by much. Compared to July 2021, used car prices are up 7.4%, or about $2,000 more expensive. In February 2020, before the pandemic, used cars were selling for about $20,700 on average. The recent drop in prices isn't noticeably enough for folks to sprint to a dealer, but the trend does give you the gift of additional time, Drury says. In other words, you won't likely have to make any rash buying decisions for fear of skyrocketing prices like in months past. On the other hand, cheaper used car prices could have the opposite effect for those who are looking to trade in their vehicle to knock down the price of a brand new one. They will likely start seeing depreciation chip away at their vehicle values, which could make someone want to line up their next payment sooner rather than later, Drury says. In July, the average trade-in value of a used vehicle was about $23,500, historically high, but a 1.6% drop from the prior month. In short, the used car market is still out of whack, and you may even come across certain models of used cars priced higher than the brand new version. Our next article from againmoney.com, entitled, Student Loan Forgiveness Timeline. When will you actually get debt relief? Now that student loan forgiveness is a reality, borrowers want to know, what's the timeline for their debts to be canceled? Earlier this week, President Joe Biden announced a plan to cancel $10,000 in student loan debt for borrowers whose annual income is less than $125,000 or under $250,000 for married couples or heads of households. Pell Grant recipients will receive $20,000 in forgiveness, according to the administration. The plan also extends the pause on student loan payments to December 31st, 2022. The move comes after months of back and forth in the White House, including the concern that forgiveness would make inflation even worse, and speculation around whether Biden would fulfill his campaign promise to forgive some student loan debt. But just as Biden's promise was murky, so is an understanding around when borrowers can expect student loan forgiveness to actually happen. Here's what to expect about the timing of the Biden administration's plan to relieve borrowers of some loan debt. Most borrowers will have to fill out an application to receive forgiveness. On Friday, administration officials said during a press briefing that an application should be available in early October. Once submitted, the process will take between 4 and 6 weeks, so the administration is recommending borrowers apply by November the 15th, so that in theory, their loans can be forgiven before payments resume next year. In a press conference earlier in the week, Biden told reporters that the application would be a short and simple form, while the Education Department has said it will announce more details on how and when borrowers can apply in the weeks ahead. If the department already has your income information from income-driven repayment plans on file, or if you recently filled out a FAFSA, you may be eligible to automatically receive relief. There are nearly 8 million borrowers in that camp, according to the news release. Since there's currently little official guidance published from the White House or the Education Department, the most important thing borrowers can do for now is check that your information, like your address and email address, is up to date with your loan servicer. You can determine who exactly your student loan provider is via the Education Department's website. You can also sign up to receive email updates on loan forgiveness if necessary. There will probably be months between the announcement and an actual change for borrowers, says Lene Erickson, the Senior Vice President of Social Policy, Education, and Politics at think tank Third Way. Plus, when borrowers have to actively apply to get something, it takes a long time, she told Money earlier this week. It's going to be a long road, Erickson says. Biden could face possible lawsuits. There's also the added complication that Biden's plan could be challenged and struck down in court, something Erickson is concerned about. Even if the plan isn't ultimately struck down, a lawsuit could delay forgiveness until after the pandemic-driven payment pause, which ends in December. Robert Kelchin, a professor and head of the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, weighed in on the possibility on Twitter. "Let the lawsuits begin over presidential authority," Kelchin wrote. I wouldn't count on forgiveness happening for a while. It may go to the Supreme Court. Our next article appeared in the Retirement Guide, entitled "A Crash Course in Medicare: What You Need to Know to Get the Most Out of This Program." More than 63 million Americans, most of them age 65 or older, depend on the Medicare insurance program to cover necessary health care costs. Despite its popularity, nearly 1 in 5 Americans are currently enrolled find it difficult to figure out exactly what it covers, what it costs, and who's eligible and how to enroll. Unfortunately, when it comes to Medicare, what you don't know can hurt you. Unless you've been collecting Social Security benefits for at least 4 months before your 65th birthday, you won't be automatically enrolled in Medicare. And missing important enrollment deadlines can permanently increase your premiums. Medicare is also a complicated program with several different parts and a host of decisions you'll need to make to ensure that you get the coverage that's right for you. How to enroll? Unless you already qualified for Medicare through a disability, you will become eligible for coverage on your 65th birthday. But most people will want to enroll at Medicare.gov months ahead of time. That's because coverage can begin weeks or months after you start the enrollment process, And you'll have to consider which of the various coverage options fit your situation to get the most out of Medicare. Your initial enrollment period includes the 3 months before the month of your 65th birthday and the 3 months after, for a total of 7 calendar months. Let's say, for example, you were born in November. Your initial enrollment period would begin on the first day of August and end on the last day of February. In general, it's important to apply for Medicare during your initial enrollment period. Enrolling late may delay coverage, trigger penalties, and leave you with permanently higher monthly premiums. There is an exception to this rule, however. If you are still covered by your or your spouse's job-based insurance plan, you may be able putting off Medicare. In this case, once your current plan runs out, you have 8 months to sign up for Medicare without facing late enrollment penalties. Parts and premiums. The Medicare program comprises 4 parts. Parts A and B cover hospital and outpatient services and form what is called Original Medicare. Part D offers prescription drug coverage through private insurers. And Part C, also called Medicare Advantage, offers privately issued alternatives to Original Medicare that may also cover prescription drugs and other medical expenses. Usually a Medicare beneficiary enrolls in either Parts A, B, and D together, or Part C by itself. The Medicare is primarily funded with public money. It isn't free health coverage. Medicare beneficiaries typically have to budget for monthly premiums, deductibles, copays, and coinsurance. These costs can vary by plan and income level. For example, if your income qualifies you for the Extra Help program, Medicare may cover a larger portion of your prescription drug cost. State-administered Medicare savings programs offer additional financial support to low-income beneficiaries. If your income is on the higher side, your premiums increase. If your 2020 income was greater than $91,000 or $182,000 for those married and filing jointly, unfortunately, you'll pay increased premiums for your Part B and Part D coverage in 2022. Part A, hospital services. Services covered by Medicare Part A include hospital stays, care at skilled nursing facilities, inpatient rehabilitation services, hospice services, and in certain cases, home health services. If you or your spouse paid into the system through payroll taxes for at least 10 years, Part A coverage comes with no monthly premium. If not, you can still buy into Part A, but it will cost you hundreds of dollars a month. After you reach your Part A deductible, which is $1,556 in 2022, Medicare will cover the cost of up to 60 days in the hospital. Part B, outpatient care. Medicare Part B covers some cost of medically necessary and preventive care, including clinical research, ambulance services, durable medical equipment, and mental health services. In 2022, the standard Part B monthly premium is $170.10, though you may pay more or less than that depending on your income. After you reach your Part B deductible, which is $233 in 2022, Medicare will cover 80% of qualifying services. And Part C, Medicare Advantage. Medicare Part C plans are alternatives to Original Medicare offered by private insurers and must cover everything covered by Parts A and B. Part C plans often include additional coverage, such as vision care, hearing care, dental care, or prescription drugs. Part C plans can vary widely in how much they cost and what they cover. Part D, prescription drugs. Medicare Part D plans help cover prescription drug costs. Premiums and deductibles vary by plan, and the average basic Part D premium is around $33 in 2022. Some beneficiaries with higher incomes will pay more than the basic premium. To compare Part D plans, calculate how much you'd pay for your current medications under each plan's cost-sharing scheme. Medigap, Medicare Supplemental Insurance. Medigap is private insurance bought to help cover the cost associated with Medicare Parts A and B. Every Medigap plan falls into one of 10 categories designated A through N. While these plans must meet standards set by the federal government, the specific benefits and costs vary. Additional assistance. Navigating the ins and outs of the Medicare program can become overwhelming. Your local state health insurance assistance program can offer objective, knowledgeable support. Medicare.gov and the AARP's Medicare Resource Center are also valuable sources of information. Appearing in Keplinger Personal Finance, is a target date fund right for you? I don't ignore my retirement accounts, but I consider myself mostly a set-it-and-forget-it investor. I prefer to pick an investment strategy, arrange automatic contributions, and then sit back without tinkering much with my portfolio. For that reason, I used a target date fund in my 401k when I had one. I'm self-employed now. My spouse invests in a fund with a 2050 target date through their employer's plan. A target date fund aims to create an appropriate investment mix for the investor's age and appropriate retirement date. A fund designed for someone with many years until retirement includes a high proportion of stocks for growth. Over time, the fund regularly rebalances, allocating a greater percentage of assets to less risky income-producing investments, such as bonds, as retirement nears. We're far from alone in our preference for target date funds. Among 401k participants in their 20s, 54% of their assets were in target date funds at the end of 2019, and investors in their 30s had 45% of assets in target date funds, according to a study from the investment company Institute and Employee Benefit Research Institute. Many large employer plans automatically enroll employees and use target date funds as the default investment choice. Evaluating your plan, target date funds are attractive for the simplicity, but if you're dissatisfied with your plan's target date offerings or have the appetite to construct a custom portfolio, you can typically select among a menu of several other investment options. If you have decades to go until retirement, you may want to dedicate 80 to 90% of your portfolio to stocks. Individual needs vary, but as an example, a millennial might choose 40% large capitalization stocks, 20% mid-cap stocks, 10% small-cap stocks, 10% international stocks, and 20% short- to mid-term bond funds, says Melinda Satterley, a financial planner in the Seattle area. Include both growth-oriented and bargain-price stocks. If you go the do-it-yourself route, periodically check your portfolio to ensure the asset allocation is on point. Actively managing your investments calls for greater ability to keep your cool when the stock market dips. The goal is to buy low and sell high. But our brains are wired to do just the opposite, says a certified financial planner in Torrance, California. If you want help choosing and monitoring investments, see whether your plan provider offers advisory services or consider hiring a financial planner. If you stick with a target date fund, occasionally review whether it's still a good fit. As retirement approaches, you may gain assets in other accounts, creating a need for a tailored blend of investments to keep your overall allocation on track. As your target date fund asset allocation shifts, judge whether it matches your risk tolerance. If you're an aggressive investor, for example, you may find that your portfolio's stock allocation diminishes more than you'd like as time passes. You could switch to a fund with a target date further into the future or add stock funds to the lineup. Our last article today from Keplinger Personal Finance entitled Sign-up bonuses with a catch. Credit card issuers aren't the only companies offering sign-up bonuses to win your business. Banks and brokerages are offering bonuses of their own to attract new customers. And with the new, said the new website, bankbonus.com, it makes it easier to find them. The site is simple to navigate. Choose your state from the drop-down menu to see which financial institutions are offering bonuses in your area. You can select personal or business accounts and the type of account you're looking for, savings, checking, credit card, or brokerage. After you choose an offer, the site lists the requirement to snag the bonus and the link to access it. For example, TD Bank is offering a $300 bonus for opening a new Beyond checking account. To get the bonus, you must open the account and direct deposit a total of $2,500 within 60 days. The bonus will appear in your account no later than 140 days after opening it. The offer ends October 31st and is available in a healthy list of states, according to Bank Bonus. However, opening a new account solely for the bonus isn't all it's cracked up to be. Typically, these accounts have high deposit and daily balance requirements, along with high monthly maintenance fees. And if you don't meet the requirements, the bank could deny you the bonus or claw it back. And this article will be edited today due to time constraints. We have run out of time for this episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Larry Wilson, reading on behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.